Five.
And here we go.
Okay, let's run.
Let's count them down. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another new episode of the Top 5 Film Dive. I'm your host, Mr. Kurt Morrison, coming to you live, as always, from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And on today's episode, we discuss this week's Academy Awards show and then deep dive into the last 25 years of Best Picture winners at the Academy Awards, ranking our five favorite of the bunch. So stay tuned for that. But first, and most importantly, I would like to introduce my guest for today, a newcomer to the show, a fellow film critic, a writer for, get this guys, Cinema Solace, the Buffed Film Buffs. By the way, very jealous of the name. It's fucking goddamn brilliant. he is my friend, my fellow member of the League of Cinephiles and the Critics Circle. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tyler Bannerick, how are you, my man? It is so good to have you on the show. Thank you for doing it.
I am great. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for the introduction. I'm really happy to be here and I'm really glad to be here. And I'm really get down to it. So a little bit about me. I'm a 22-year-old film guy from the great land of Omaha, Nebraska.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. Like you said, you already hit it up. I'm a writer for cinemasolace.com and Buff Film Buffs, which fun fact, I met Lid, the person who runs that website, through the League of Cinephiles. So mm-hmm. So that's really cool. So League of Cinephiles is the reason why I write for Buff Film Buffs now.
Cool.
And I didn't know that. Yeah, I but yeah, I'm really I'm excited to be here.
Small world, I didn't know that you guys met through that, ironically enough.
Yeah,
that's very cool. Mm-hmm. Guys, check out cinemasolace.com, by the way. You got a great team of writers over there. I can never pronounce it. Is it Caven or Cavan?
Caven.
Okay, that's what I thought. Caven. Mm-hmm. Eyes is over there with you. You got a squad, a whole squad, and I continually check in on it, like at least week to week, and just kind of catch up on all the good stuff that you guys are consistently posting. Quick question: the last thing that I read of yours, sir, if I remember correctly, as I'm scrolling through here, was your review of Tragedy of Macbeth. You convinced me to give Tragedy of Macbeth a watch.
Really?
So, yeah, I wasn't sold on it, man. I was so on my like not watch list, and I read your review. So props to you, my brother. So
thank you.
Yeah, man. So, anyways, we are continuing along here, and as I was saying, basically, the kind of gist of today's episode is the Academy Awards. But before we dive into that, Ty, you are now being put on the spot, as I call it,
okay,
with all my guests. And that is the top five dive with our guest.
All right.
So basically, it's just five questions that I go through with every single new guest to the show. Off the top. No pressure. Who is your favorite actor?
I had a tough time deciding this. There was two I was back and forth with, but came an ultimate decision eventually. Okay. And I chose Leonardo DiCaprio.
Cool. So, favorite actress?
Favorite actress, that was a no-brainer. Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Big J-Law fan.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite director?
Okay. I have a tie for this one because I could not decide between these two, but one is Christopher Nolan, as you can see, mm-hmm, shirt. That one is Quentin Tarantino. Love those guys.
Wonderful. Good pick. Yep. Good pick. Big Tarantino guy. So funny. We should have a discussion one day about Nolan. We should have a big talk about Nolan. So
it's, I'd be down for that.
It's such a big love-hate relationship. Not hate. Love and sometimes dislike relationship with my guy. Favorite genre?
So I don't have one right now just because I like to watch all. I'm open to any kind.
Cool.
But I will say at one point in time, when my time as a film buff, the coming of age genre was my favorite. So wonderful. Like I was really big into like John Hughes and like some of his works like Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, 16 Candles, you know, like all that kind of stuff. So
yep, great stuff, man. Great stuff. I got them all on Blu-ray, ironically enough. So some of the few films that I still own on Blu-ray, Breakfast Club and 16 Candles. Last but not least, favorite films. I say films, plural, because some people have one, some people have three, some people have five. The floor is yours, sir.
Yeah, so I see you put out max of three, so I'm going to list my top three. Right. My number three, I'm going to count down. My number three is The Shining.
I love
that movie.
All right.
One of my favorite horror films of all time.
Yeah.
And it basically cements like what I love in a horror movie where it doesn't rely on jump scares. It's just super duper eerie. And the atmosphere is just is that that's the scary thing.
Yeah.
And I love about that. So that's number three. Number two is Pulp Fiction. I know that sounds pretty basic for a Tarantino guy or something like that, but I genuinely love this movie. It's really great. I love the nonlinear storytelling. You know, the lines are, you know, there's some iconic lines in there. And, you know, John Travolta, Samuel Jackson, great duo. Uma Thurman's one of my favorite. I think she's my favorite actress by in a supporting role, I think. My favorite performance in that. Number one is a movie that encapsulates my entire personality, and it's Whiplash.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. And I say personality just because, like, it's a very musically inclined movie, mm-hmm. and I'm a big music guy myself. Ooh. And when I went to this movie, I saw it, and I had little expectations going into it. Like, obviously, it was like one trailer once, and, you know, found out, ooh, J.K. Simmons, he's a scary guy, intense guy.
Yeah.
But that whole movie, it came out in 2014, so I would have been like about 15, 16 years old, mm-hmm. I think. 15. Yeah, I'll just say 15. Mm-hmm. My 15-year-old brain was just like,
really, man. Yeah. We gotta have a Damien Chazelle discussion then. La La Land, ironically enough, is probably my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah, it's also my top 10 as well. So
and Whiplash is I was actually doing a list the other day, and Whiplash is kind of sitting in that like 20 to 30 range. Which we might also discuss later when we start talking about the Oscars. So that being said, buddy, on today's episode, guys, we are shining, as I said, a light on the 94th Annual Academy Awards, which will be live next Sunday, hosted by a trio of Hollywood's funniest ladies. One more time. Regina Hall, Amy Schumer, and Wanda Sykes. Now, last year's show was a disaster. Like, I can't even begin to explain how that the show just felt off. And I mean, as you and I, as film lovers and such, it might have been a little bit different for us because those were a lot of films that we had known and it was in our kind of consciousness, you know, Minari, The Father, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the numbers last year has been described as being related, the numbers related to viewership expressed that last year's award show had only 10.4 million viewers, making it the least watched Oscar broadcast since 1974 ceremony, which was when Nielsen began actually recording viewership. As I was trying to say there before, as I stuttered, a lot of people within the industry cite that the lack of theatrical films and obviously COVID-19 had a lot to do with the lack of interest. Now, you and I, again, are in a circle of guys and a circle of friends who, again, we've seen all those films. We knew all those films. And as they were coming out, there was a lot of buzz, at least within our inner circle, critics.
Mm-hmm.
But do you see a repeat of last year's show coming up next week, Ty? How do you think that this year's Oscars are going to gauge?
It's a good question. I know there's been a lot of debacle about this year. Like, originally, the Academy, you know, they announced that, from here on out, we're doing 10 movies now. Because, like, you know, they were inconsistent about how many numbers of Best Picture nominees they had per year.
Mm-hmm,
so they said, okay, we're going to stick with it 10. That's going to be the new norm. Totally cool with that. And then they announced that a lot of categories were not going to be announced or revealed during the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might play a big part of it. It might not.
Yeah.
Who knows? But I think, like, if anything's going to kill viewership for, I think, for this year, mm-hmm. if last year it was COVID, I think it'll be this year. It'll be the lack of categories, and I don't know. That could be more than this year. It could be the same. It could be fewer. But again, I'd just be, you know, who knows? At least for this year, though, I do feel like, you know, there is more movies to talk about just because, you know, people are slowly getting back to theaters.
Yeah. Yeah.
There'll be more discussion because of, you know, people come back seeing the movies and, you know, people actually seeing movies more than they did, you know, last year.
Agreed.
But But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how viewership goes with the show.
Yeah. And I think I echo your sentiment there. The movies that are in, and we're about to name them off here, in Best Picture, as well as in the Best Actress and Best Actor category.
Mm-hmm.
They're movies that there are some that people have no fucking idea what they are, which I will bring up in a second. But two of the biggest movies of the year essentially are actually in the Best Picture category. Now, you and I right now, we're going to start off. We're going to do our... we'll call them Big Four picks here. Now, tell those of you listening, we want to discuss what are aptly titled the Big Four Awards, which are Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, and Best Actress. basically category by category, we're just going to go through here, both you and I, and make our predictions for next Sunday. We're not going to go into the other awards as much as I would love to, but we're going to keep it short and sweet for the listeners here so this doesn't turn into a 2-hour long pod. Starting off with Best Actress. Ty, in the category, buddy, we've got Jessica Chastain for The Eyes of Tammy Faye, Olivia Colman, The Lost Daughter, Kristen Stewart for Spencer, Nicole Kidman being the Ricardos, and Penelope Cruz or Parallel Mothers, which ironically enough just opened in Toronto last weekend. Who are you taking?
Who am I taking?
Yeah.
So I've only seen one nominee in this whole category, so I'm easily just going to go with her, and that's Kristen Stewart.
Wonderful.
I think I'm going to go with Kristen Stewart here. So ironically though, and I don't know how I can take this, but I originally was not a fan of Spencer when I originally saw it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it. I have to be
honest. For me, it was a 2-star movie. And my biggest problem with it was that, you know, the whole time the movie is making it set up that like something's wrong with Diana and like something's going on between her and the royal family, but it doesn't verbally explain it. And as someone, you know, who doesn't know much about Princess Diana or the royal family, like, you know, what was going on during that time period, you know, I was lost the whole time.
Gotcha.
But that being said, you know, there were some things that I still liked about it, but there was still a lot of, you know, things I didn't. But the few things I did like about it, I mean, it was Chris Stewart's performance. It was good. I liked it. I mean, there are a ton of other performances from this year that I like better, but I do think Kristen Stewart's like all the ones we've gotten. I mean, she may be the only one I've seen, but I think as of right now, I think I'm pretty sure, you know, Jessica Chastain, Nicole Kidman, and everyone else, they don't, you know, stand up against her.
I agree with you.
But yeah, I mean, what about you, Kurt? What do you think?
I think it's a 2-horse race. I think I'm gonna go with my pick. I think Chastain, man. I think this is Chastain's year. Olivia Colman, I don't think she's gonna win. I do think Maggie Gyllenhaal wins for best adapted screenplay for The Lost Daughter. Being the Ricardos is so indecisive and divided. There are people who love the movie, there are people who, like myself, hate the movie. And again, you never know. The international vote might actually lean more towards Penelope. But again, Parallel Mothers, nobody has seen. It's happened. Weirder shit's happened. Yep. Marion Cotillard. Thank you, sir. Thank you. You're far more cultured than I am. she won X amount of years ago, again, for a French film. But I think it's going to be Chastain's award to lose. But I do think it's going to come down to her and Kristen Stewart. And hey, man, you never know. I mean, I think Stewart might end up pulling away with it. So our next one here is Best Actor. So we've got Andrew Garfield for Tick, Tick, Boom, Benedict Cumberbatch for Power of the Dog, Javier Bardem for Being the Ricardos, as I take a big deep breath in, Denzel Washington for The Tragic Day of Macbeth, and I would say the front runner right now is Will Smith in King Richard. Who are you taking?
I will say my original pick was Andrew Garfield for Tick, Tick, Boom. But then I saw King Richard and Will Smith. I was sold. He did give Andrew for his money. I mean, he's gotten all the big awards now. So, I mean, like the stage is set for Will to finally get his Oscar. But I'm kind of still going with Andrew, though. I don't know. I mean, I won't be surprised if Will Smith wins, but Andrew Garfield and Tick, Tick, Boom, just like, his performance, it just really hit the spot. And like seeing him, you know, play Jonathan Larson, you know, have him go through the creative process of, you know, how he, you know, he kind of like got the inspiration for Rent and eventually for a semi-autobiography, which is Tick, Tick, Boom. You know, I just thought it was really cool. On top of that, Andrew Garfield, you know, it's Andrew Garfield. He's awesome. He's the most
likable guy in Hollywood right now. Like
exactly.
The most likable guy. So
he's the best actor of all the three Spider-Men.
I agree. Yeah, it's so, the man. That's why we're friends, Tyler. God damn it!
Exactly.
This is why we're friends.
But yeah, so I mean, I would love to see Andrew win.
Yeah.
Small chance he will, but if Will Smith wins, I will not be upset. But Kurt, what about you? Who do you got?
I mean, you've got. I would say the two pulling away with it is Benedict and King. Sorry, Will Smith, not King Will Smith. Jesus, God. You know, at the SAG Awards 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, or maybe even last week, Will wins it, has this great speech, kind of like cements himself in the kind of critics circle that, like, you know, he's going to take this. I think it's his time, man. I genuinely think, you know, he's paid his dues. I think that this ends up being that award, this year ends up being that award, mm-hmm. where because he's so likable and he's worked so hard for so many years mm-hmm. that this is like his swan song, right? Like Bennett, everybody loves Benedict Cumberbatch. And, Andrew Garfield's still going to have a continually great career. I think that again, Garfield and Benedict, people know that they're going to be nominated for more Oscars, but this is like Will Smith's like one more big shot, right? Because I mean, if I remember correctly here, we had nominations for Pursuit of Happiness, Ali, and something else. So like, it's not that Will Smith hasn't been nominated, but I think that this is like his big push. This is finally the guy's year, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the moment that really brings a tear to the crowd's eye, mm-hmm. which I think that the Oscars needs, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. So moving along here, two different sides of the coin for actress, and then we both went with Will Smith. Best director. Mm-hmm. So this one's interesting because there's somebody who at least I see kind of pulling away with it, but again, the Academy in the last couple of years, man, with these foreign films, they've really kind of thrown some wild cards out there. So we got James Campion for The Power of the Dog, Kenneth Branagh for Belfast, Ryuzuki Hamaguchi for Drive My Car.
Yep.
Mr. the all-time greatest Steven Spielberg for West Side Story, and then PTA Paul Thomas Anderson for Licorice Pizza. Who are you taking?
Yep. Yeah, so honestly, there's someone that I think is missing here, and it's Denis Villeneuve.
Yes.
What he did with Dune.
I would agree with that.
It was amazing. How he didn't get nominated, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that being said, my pick is Steven Spielberg.
So, oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, I know Jane Campion is probably going to walk away with it, and probably there's probably one or two others that, you know, people the Academy would rather have than Spielberg. But for me, I think this is like West Side Story is like Steven Spielberg's probably his best reviewed film since Saving Private Ryan. I can't think of any other film he's made since 2000 that has gotten this much, you know, critical acclaim and mass acclaim that West Side Story has gotten since Saving Private Ryan. And like, you know, you could tell the movie was really personal to him. He's been trying to make, you know, West Side Story for years now.
Totally.
And, you know, he got what he wanted and it was beautiful. And on top of that, I lost my train of thought. Dang it. What was I going to say? Oh my gosh. I had something.
Take your time. Take your time.
And like with West Side Story, you know, he checks the box on musicals. Mm-hmm. So now I think he's done like almost every single genre except Westerns. And I would love to see Steven Spielberg do a Western. Once he gets that Western, Kurt, it's like he's Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet and he's got like each of the stones for the genre. And then once he gets it, you know,
he's like inevitable.
Exactly. So,
and then Spielberg ends the film universe because he's like, that's it, rain fire. I'm going completely out to left field here. I think in my heart of hearts, Jane Campion makes sense because she also just won the Directors Guild Award. I think it was last week, or if not this weekend.
Yeah, she's likely win for this.
You know what? Okay, I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to go with Jane Campion for this one. Okay. Only because that in my gut, it's telling me that that's who's going to be the winner. But as I said, man, the director of Drive My Car, Ryuzuki Hamaguchi, if magically this happens, it would not surprise me, only because of Bong Joon-ho's award win for Parasite 2 or 3 years ago now. 2 years ago, pardon me, right? So you never know, weirder things have happened. Last but not least, and I think, again, this is a very... I would say debatable topic. There's a lot of people who have different opinions here. We got Best Picture. Very broad range of films here. Nightmare Alley, Don't Look Up, Dune, Drive My Car, Belfast, Licorice Pizza, The Power of the Dog, your favorite West Side Story, King Richard, and the film that won last night at the Producers Guild of America, Coda. Who are you taking?
I'm in an interesting situation this year for Best Picture. And I say that because, you know, every year I've always, you know, been able to, you know, rank them no problem, you know, have my picks. But I feel like this year there's the list that I have films I like.
Yeah.
And then there's a list of like who I want to win. So, I mean, does that make any sense to you?
Yes, it does. Because I can even relate that to the conversation we're about to have about our top five favorites. Continue.
But I'm just going to say, like, you know, on my list of, like, you know, from high ranking from best to worst, in my personal opinion, not from who I want to win.
Yeah.
I would say the ones at the top of like all my films from 2021, and that is Dune. So, I mean, Dune, it's a part one of like, you know, a three-part trilogy. And, but what Denis Villeneuve did with this is just absolutely incredible. Like Spielberg, West Side Story, Villeneuve was really passionate about Dune. Mm-hmm. You know, he loves the book, you know, he got everyone he wanted, and like everyone's perfectly casted, and like, you know, Greg Fraser's cinematography is awesome, and you know who I think should win. And then
if he doesn't win that, we will riot, folks. We're just gonna put that out there in the universe right now. So
and then freaking Hans Zimmer, that's another, if Hans Zimmer doesn't win best score, I'm definitely gonna riot, because this guy, Kurt, I don't know if you knew this, but he made 3 albums worth of music,
really,
for one movie. if that doesn't scream dedication, then I don't know what does.
Yeah. I am gonna play it safe. Okay. Mm. I love Dune. I love Nightmare Alley too, surprisingly. That was like a random afternoon matinee movie that I thoroughly enjoyed, that I got to basically watch in like a movie theater by myself. Mm-hmm. By the way, also guys, Nightmare Alley streaming now on Disney Plus. I think it might be down actually on Hulu for you guys down in the US, but it's Disney Plus here in Canada.
Yeah, I know, Hulu and HBO Max down here in the US.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I gotta go Coda, man. I genuinely think Coda's gonna run away with it. I think that it's gonna be the surprise of the night.
Really?
Where everybody has that jump up moment. The Power of the Dog would be, in my mind, the front runner, because it's that grappling drama with a topic that's, I would say, it's something that the Academy likes to lean towards, you know, on the same vein as like a Moonlight.
Yeah.
I think that's, again, like in the same kind of page as Parasite, right? Like, I think that Coda pulls away with it because of the preferential voting, mm-hmm. because more people are going to put it in that one or two spot. Yeah. And I think there is a very decisive group that loves Power of the Dog, but then there's another group that like really dislikes it.
Yeah.
And again, because everybody in the Academy votes for Best Picture, I think that's where the divide's going to happen. So we will see. We will find out next Sunday, guys. Tune in for sure. I believe it's cut down to a 3-hour show now. Am I right in saying that?
Something like that.
I think it's 8 to 11 now, guys. Check it out on ABC. Don't know what the time is. I guess it'll be for you 7 o'clock. It'll be an 8 o'clock here.
Yep, 7 o'clock here
in the Eastern time zone. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, pardon me, guys. Another thing to not forget to tune into: League of Cinephiles YouTube channel, where our near and dear friend Mr. Alex Helmer is always joined by Guy Noll every Sunday for the Guy and Helmer Unfiltered Show. So please, friends, mm-hmm. go check that out. Was talking with Alex earlier. Pardon me. I'm sure the fellows will be doing their picks this week, coming week for the Oscars. And now to jump into today's topic at hand. So the Academy Awards are always a divisive topic. And as rules have changed and things have modified, and Lord knows how many times, it is always a great topic of discussion for those of us within the film fan community. So Tyler and I are going to rewind the clock a bit and do a deep dive into our 5 favorite Best Picture winners of the last 25 years. Now, hear me out, folks. From 1998's show, which celebrated 1997's films, to last year, all right, this is our window of kind of dissecting the movies that have won, picking the 5, but also going into another fun discussion later on, which we will be looking at one instance each and getting into it as to when the Best Picture Award went to the wrong film that is to come shortly. Ooh. Thoughts before we start, my good sir?
Yeah, I'll be honest, going into this, I had just the 5 from since 1996. I didn't know anything about the whole where the Oscars went wrong, but I'll be down to get into that.
Cool, yeah. I snuck that in on you. But nevertheless, guys, so just to preface it again, these are our favorite Best Picture winners, right? Not the films that we perhaps think should have won or should not have won. That is again for the other part of the show. But again, I have movies on here that a few people strongly dislike, that ended up winning Best Picture. Tyler, I'm going to start off because I want you to end the show, sir. And we're going to go back and forth with our number 5 picks. And 1997 in film is a pivotal year because of Titanic's release. Now, my number 5 pick, and I was going to put it as my honorable mention, but I, being the old man that I am, remember the theatrical experience that was Titanic. Mm-hmm. And Titanic, I'm putting in at number five. It's still, I would say, not the best thing James Cameron's ever done, but for the Oscar caliber grandiose movie that we look for when it comes to movies winning Best Picture, this is always the first one that comes to my mind. I mean, there's maybe one or two other ones, like Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, that are like, again, that like event level type of movie that have won. But yeah, Titanic has a special place in my heart, man. I went to go see it. I think it had already been out in theaters for about 2.5 months, maybe 3 months. And I was a young boy, for God's sakes. I think I was 8 or 9 years old, and it stuck with me. It really stuck with me, man. Going to see it with my mom and my dad. And this is the sway point, personally, just going through the history of the Oscars. This is the swaying point, not only in the 90s, but like when the Oscars start to do this thing for about 10 years where they're like, oh, people really like us when, and like tune in, especially mm-hmm. tune in when like the big box office hits get nominated. And it mm-hmm. that kind of mentality putters out for afterwards. Mm-hmm. But again, I think Titanic is a product of its time, but it's also a really good fucking movie, a really entertaining movie. So number five, Titanic. What is yours, sir? What is your number five?
My number five is actually Martin Scorsese's The Departed. So
let's get into this.
Yeah, I don't know if you ever saw your you know, how much the early League of Cinephiles lore that you know.
Yep.
I once said that I got two overrated directors. Mm. One is Spike Lee. Mm. The other is Martin Scorsese.
Wow. So, I agree with you on the Spike Lee front, buddy. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. But Spike Lee, that's another conversation for another day. But,
yeah. Yep.
You know, for Martin Scorsese, you know, someone once, I heard Sean from Matt Teach Movies once say, mm-hmm. sometimes overrated does not equal bad. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly the case here, Martin Scorsese. He's a good director, but I think he's like Beyonce, where he's just like, he gets so much acclaim and like people treat him like a king. And I'm like, yeah. I don't get it. I just don't get it. But yeah. But that being said, there are a few films that I genuinely love. And one of them is The Departed. I really love, you know, seeing, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio versus Matt Damon, you know, in a little like, you know, Matt Damon, you know, is a rat on going to cover as a cop. And, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio being a cop is going to cover as a rat. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. And Jack Nicholson, great. Mark Wahlberg's Oscar nominated performance, awesome. But yeah, I think you know, there's one film, and it got Martin Scorsese his first mm-hmm. best director win. Mm-hmm. So that's even cool in and of itself. But yeah, that's my number five. It's The Departed.
My number four, big guy. I'm gonna follow suit, man. I love this. This is like that phenomenal cat and mouse crime thriller type of movie that I feed mm-hmm. off of. Like, there's garbage crime movies, which has been a yeah. discussion on Big Picture, which is like my podcast that I listen to religiously. And then there's like Oscar caliber crime movies, like, again, like this, No Country for Old Men, for God's sakes, these movies that, again, really have this aura about them because of not only the director, but yeah. the cast that he's built around the story. Again, The Departed is it's so rewatchable. It is so like anxiously like nerve-wracking even when you're mm-hmm. watching it upon rewatch, and especially right. I think it's actually a movie that's gotten better with rewatches, because I've probably seen it probably yeah. 5 or 6 times in my life. Go ahead.
Yeah, I noticed that too, because like the first time I watched it, I was not too big into it.
Yeah.
But then I watched it again mm-hmm. and then like it all kicked in, it all made sense, and like I actually enjoyed it on the rewatch. So
yeah, man. Yeah. And I think I just pick up on the little things, like you start to notice the little ticks of Jack Nicholson, again, who criminally is not nominated for Best Supporting Actor for this. I'm proud of Marky Mark. Marky Mark gets yeah. one. Bravo. But like those mm-hmm. two should have both gotten nominations for it. But I also think that, again, it's kind of like Scorsese swan song, man. Besides La La Land, Goodfellas is my other, like, they're number one or number two. It just depends on my mood that day. As my favorite films of all time.
Okay.
Oh, the Departed harkens back to that like really fast, frantic style of
gotcha
of not only directing but of storytelling that Scorsese, you know, did in like the late 80s and 90s eras, mm-hmm. in the same vein as Goodfellas and then in the Casino, right? So yeah, number four is The Departed. What a great lead in, buddy. So what a great lead in, man. So
yeah.
we're moving along here. Your number four pick.
My number four is a movie that I watched within the past month. Mm-hmm. And I've been looking forward to it a lot. And some people, you know, some people love it, some people don't like it, but my number four is Slumdog Millionaire.
Ah,
this okay. movie, this movie genuinely blew me away. And then for a while, it was like one of the best movies I had seen in like, you know, recently, like, you know, like I saw West Side Story in December and like, that was an easy 5-star movie. Mm-hmm. But then I had like this little drought and then I saw Slumdog Millionaire and like, it totally ended that drought. Mm-hmm. This movie was freaking amazing. Danny Boyle is awesome in it. Dev Patel's performance is incredible. I mean, you know, it's so atmospheric and the story of it is awesome. Like I love a good underdog story and you know, it's just overall, it's just a phenomenal film. I mean, I know Hunter Friesen says that it's kind of overrated. Like he's like, it says his three most overrated Best Picture winners are Slumdog Millionaire, American Beauty, and The Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
And
I'm gonna make a note beside that. Continue.
but yeah, I mean, Slumdog Millionaire, it's just awesome. It's easily like, you know, I think definitely up there with Danny Boyle's best movie. I don't know how I'd rank his movies right now. I have to sit down and do that, but nah, Slumdog Millionaire it's awesome. It's great.
So looking at the movies of 2007, it was the 2008 show.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Slumdog Millionaire up against Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Frost Nixon, mm-hmm. Milk, and mm-hmm. Sean Penn takes home Best Actor for Milk.
Yep.
And The Reader. Okay. So yes. I have seen 4 out of those 5 movies. And if you mm-hmm. had to put a gun in my hand to say, okay, 3 of these have to die, one of them is going to survive. It's got to be Slumdog Millionaire. Slumdog Millionaire is as you said, as entertaining as it is rewatchable. Mm-hmm. And yeah, okay, again, it's a little bit kind of cookie cutter. It's fine, but it's still like a movie that makes you feel good at the end of it.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't necessarily agree with Hunter, but I think in a year that was kind of weak overall for like prestige films, this is the right one. Yeah. I think that this is the film that deserved Best Picture. And I mean, Boyle even got the nomination for Best Director, if I remember correctly. Right?
Yeah, and he won.
Did he win?
Yeah, he won for director.
Oh, my bad. Sorry, yeah. I didn't research hard enough, apparently. So.
You're good, dude. You're good.
But good pick, man. Really good pick. I haven't seen it in a very long time. And I remember I did sob the last time I watched it. So moving along here, my number 3. So I actually went back and forth on this. And the fantasy lover in me would say that, like, you know, a film like Lord of the Rings Return of the King deserves to be on my list. It won in 2003, or I should say it was the best film of 2003. I don't even think that that's actually the best Lord of the Rings movie. I think it's actually my least favorite out of the three, which is like trying to pick out like who's your favorite child, right? Like they're all amazing. Nevertheless, maybe there's some scarring in me that, you know, somebody once was like, you know, you're my second favorite child. Anyways, point being is I'm going to go the opposite direction. So my number 3 is one that I did not appreciate when I first saw it, actually, when it came out. And I bought it on Blu-ray and remember just being like, okay, like, you know, this is fine. Mm-hmm. But No Country for Old Men is, again, that as I get older, it gets better. And man, it is just, I spoke about Departed the same way, where it just feels like you're on the edge of your seat and you're anxious for the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Very similar to the same feeling I get when I watch Silence of the Lambs, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, mm-hmm. where it's that like not necessarily gory or not necessarily like visceral, like really kind of in your face thriller or like discomfort that would come from a thriller, but
yeah,
this gets into your mind and it gets into your brain of that again cat and mouse chase that's going on throughout the movie, mm-hmm. with Josh Brolin's character and Javier Bardem. And not to say that Javier Bardem isn't just this evil incarnate mm-hmm. on screen, but
yeah,
it's so good, man. I know it's the Coen brothers' best movie, and I will argue with anybody about that. I say that in reserve because I've never seen Fargo. Don't know why. But No Country for Old Men is just climbed up the ranks for me. And when we were making this list together, our separate lists together, it was one of those ones I was like, oh my God, I forgot that it actually won Best Picture. So I'm going to go with that as my number 3 pick.
Okay. All right.
What are your thoughts on No Country for Old Men?
So No Country for Old Men is another movie where I, you know, wasn't a fan of right away. I might have even fallen asleep watching it the first time. Just because, you know, how like, you know, because, you know, like it's a very slowly paced film.
Yes.
Yeah. But even if it clocks in at a little over 2 hours,
yeah,
it's still, it's a,
It feels like it's three. It feels like
yeah, exactly. But but no, I went back and rewatched it, and you know, I liked it a little bit more. I mean, I don't love the movie, but I do see why people like it so much, and you know why it deserves the acclaim it has. And you know, Javier Bardem, you know, he's awesome in it. You know, Josh Brolin, Tommy Lee Jones, Woody Harrelson. You know, it's got a great cast and everything. I'm not sure if it's my favorite Coen Brothers movie. I would have to I don't know if I was just down ranking because I've never ranked Coen Brothers movies. But yeah, no Country for Old Men. You know, it's a movie that I like, but you know, I wouldn't go gaga for it like you know a lot of people are like you. But
yeah.
I understand where the claim is from, but for me, like, you know, I like it, but I don't love it.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Cool, man. What is your number three now? You have my attention because I'm trying to figure out as I knock some off my list and then I go, okay, we only have X amount of movies left. What's your number three?
Yeah. My number three is, I kind of dropped some foreshadowing, early in the episode, but, my number three is, The Hurt Locker.
Oh so man. Cool.
Hurt Locker for me, it's a dope film. Honestly. I've seen it about twice in both times I've, you know, it's kept me invested and like it, it's been fun. You know, everyone's in it great. Like, you know, Jeremy Renner, Anthony Mackie, Ralph Fiennes, Guy Pearce, you know, all of them.
Renner army stands strong, yo.
Yeah. And, I remember I watched this for a film class when, I was in school and, my professor made up a really good point. Shout out to Wheeler Winston Dixon, best film professor ever. But he made a point that that sometimes, you know, when you watch a movie, you know, sometimes all you just need is like some exposition. And you just see the characters' lives unfold. You just you get introduced to the characters, you know, where they live, you know, what they're doing, like the who, what, when, where, why. And, you know, you just see their lives unfold. And that's exactly what the case was with The Hurt Locker after watching it, you know, once or twice. And I thought that was really unique. And I honestly, I love that little, you know, I love that type of story where, you know, you get introduced to these characters and you just see the lives unfold. And yeah, and I think that's like my favorite one of it. And, you know, I'm glad it won.
I'm a big Catherine Bigelow stan. I just have to put that out there. I love that woman to death. I would marry her in a heartbeat, even though she's in her mid 60s. Nevertheless, I have to go rewatch this, man. I got to go rewatch this now. You've convinced me. I got to give this a shot this week. There's six movies on here that have won Best Picture that I've never seen. Let me rephrase that. That sounds fucking awful as the host of this show. There are two movies I have never seen, and there are four movies that I haven't seen since they came out, and Hurt Locker falls in that latter category there. All right. I haven't seen The Hurt Locker in probably 10 years. And I remember, like, I think going into it, the year that it won was Bigelow against James Cameron for Avatar and The Hurt Locker.
Yep. Yeah.
And I remember being like, oh, wow, The Hurt Locker won. That's weird. Hey, Jim Cameron, you know, your ex-wife beat you. But yeah. And then it just kind of fell off my radar. I got to give this another shot. Ironically enough, the film next year that won it, which I wholeheartedly disagree with, The King's Speech.
Oh, yeah.
Is another film that I haven't seen. That's one of the two.
Yeah, I haven't seen King's Speech either.
King's Speech and Spotlight. Never seen either of those films. So,
oh, we haven't seen Spotlight.
I haven't seen Spotlight. It's a little too. I've been told by my fiance. So, Spotlight is a film. Her words, not mine. Yeah. Spotlight's a film that you got to make sure you have nothing else to do for the rest of the day after watching Spotlight because it'll suck the energy out of you because it's such a heavy story. And like I know what the story is, but I just don't. Want it. It's like Schindler's List. I've watched Schindler's List once when I was like 8 years old, and I've never watched it again. Because I know that like it just turned me to like a mentally distraught individual, and I'm way more emotional now as a 33-year-old man than I ever have been. So, okay, continuing on here as I pour my heart out to our listeners, we are going, sir, with cue the music. When the Oscars got it wrong, folks. What this segment is going to showcase is we each, and I'm putting Tyler on the spot with this one, we will each be looking at one instance as to when the Best Picture Award went to the wrong film. This is going to be a hot topic, and I cannot wait to hear what people give me shit for in the comments section on Apple and on Spotify and on the social medias and X and whatever. Do you want me to start off or do you already have a pick right
now? This is your show. You go first.
Oh, brother. Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you. So it's tough for me to say. Okay, so first one that came to mind was Dave Fincher's The Social Network. Now, it's tough for me to say that and to even justify my answer because I've never seen The King's Speech. So not a valid fair answer because I'm very biased and I've only seen one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So my pick is going to, I don't even know if you've seen this film, is I would suppose that you've seen this film. It came out about 15 years ago, but nevertheless,
okay.
My pick is going to be Crash. Now, hear me out. In that year that Crash is nominated, you have several films, several good films, mind you. But the one that sticks out to me is Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
I adore Brokeback Mountain as a film. I think it's a beautiful love story. It is perfectly shot. Ang Lee's finest piece of filmmaking. And again, I will go to the grave saying that Life of Pi is fine, guys. but I think as a whole and an entire film, Crash again wins off that preferential voting and takes the best picture award away from Brokeback Mountain, which even again to this day, like I watched the two of them and it's just, it's mind boggling to me how Crash ended up winning. Nevertheless, again, also in that year, Capote, Good Night and Good Luck, and Munich, directed by our boy Steven Spielberg, were all nominated. But I think they got it wrong. I genuinely think they got it wrong. And Crash isn't a bad movie. I actually really enjoy Crash. I watched it again over the kind of COVID break of last year. But I still think Brokeback Mountain is a far superior piece of filmmaking. And that is my pick. On to you, sir.
Yeah, so there are quite a few, I would say. I mean, I know you have a justifiable pick, say you know, choosing Brokeback Mountain should want over Crash. I mean, I haven't seen Crash. I'm not planning on seeing it, but I haven't seen that. But I will say I do agree that now I haven't seen King's Speech, but I do agree that The Social Network was robbed that year. Well, let me think here.
Hot take coming in, folks.
I mean, I gotta say it, but I think La La Land should have won more than the 7 seconds that it got.
You're the best guest this show has ever had.
Yes, I will. Yeah, I will. I'll say that. I mean, I would say, you know, I would say Social Network and Brokeback Mountain, but like I haven't seen Crash and The King's Speech, so I don't feel right saying those just because I haven't seen them. But for, you know, the movies that I have seen, I think La La Land definitely should have won. Like what Damien Chazelle did with that movie was just absolutely freaking amazing. And he was 32 years old when he did it. I mean, like, can you imagine, you know, being, you know, in your early 30s and you make a film as grand and as, you know, incredible and as beautiful as La La Land? And, you know, you got Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, you know, they're awesome. You know, they're chemistry. One of the best duos in Hollywood.
Oh, the chemistry.
You know, you got Justin Hurwitz, who's and his incredible score. You know, you got like Pascal Paul, who are in the early days of their rise, you know, writing the lyrics for the songs, and you know, everything else just clicked and it was just so amazing. And you know, let me just say, Kurt, when they announced La La Land as a winner, I was on top of the world.
Same.
I was like one of the happiest people.
Yep.
And then they were like, oh wait, there's been a mistake. Moonlight as the actual winner. Next same moment, I'm like, I did a full 180 like that. And I might've even shed a tear or two.
When it happened, man. And it was a moment. Honestly, it was a moment that, like, as a film fan, I will never forget. Cause I, the confusion.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But then also they're like, okay, they're pulling a fast one on us. I was like, this is a really mean prank, but this is a good prank. And then it being like, Oh no. Like somebody fucked up. And you know what? I'm not a big fan of Moonlight. I don't love the film. I think it's great to look at, but La La Land is my jam. Like La La, even in that year, let's say if we take La La Land out of that equation, every single film, and I will stand by this statement. I will die on this sword. Ready for this? Every single film nominated that year, I like more than Moonlight. Arrival, Fences, Hacksaw Ridge, Hell or High Water, which is fucking phenomenal, Hidden Figures, even again entertainment, Lion and Manchester by the Sea, all of those I would have taken over Moonlight, but La La Land is the standout of 2016. My number two pick actually is pretty recent, man. Although it's funny because I actually didn't even have this to win. I loved 1917 was my film of that year, and what a year for just all of the best picture nominees. 2019 was a knockout. You got, what do we have here? We had, oh Lord, Ford versus Ferrari, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, also one of my favorites of the year. But 1917, I was sure was going to take it. And here comes a little film out of Korea called Parasite. I'm not going to ramble on like I have on past shows about how much I adore this film, but I can wholeheartedly say and do feel in my heart of hearts that, again, it's a film that's gotten better every time I watch it, because I have such an appreciation for the direction. And even the acting, the whole squad and the whole ensemble is phenomenal together. I love it. I absolutely adore Parasite. I think it's one of the best movies of the last 20 years. It's Bong Joon-ho's masterpiece. Again, this is all sentiments that everybody's already echoed. When I was making that list of my top five favorites of the last 25 years, it really, and again, it might just even be recency bias, but it really stands out in comparison to even the films that just won the years prior to it. So again, the year before that, Green Book, Shape of Water, Moonlight, Birdman even. Again, and I really love Birdman, but it's just a cut above the rest. And I think that that's why it's a film that is so kind of universally acclaimed, right? I've never met one person who didn't love Parasite.
Yeah, me too. I'm like that as well.
But Parasite's my number two, man. So
thoughts? Yeah. No, you hit the spot. I mean, I will say that for 2019, my top three favorite films from that year were the front runners for Best Picture. And I was on cloud nine with that. Parasite, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, in 1917.
Same.
All those. And like when I just, all those great moments, you know, Parasite, you know, love that. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you know, Quentin Tarantino doing something different and, you know, killing it. And then 1970 was a freaking moment for me. It was like the first time like I saw a movie and I got so emotional over it because it was just so beautiful. Not because like something was sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because like the whole movie, like it was just so gorgeous. And, you know, I'll never forget the time I saw 1917 in theaters. It was a great night and a great day. And, Parasite.
VIP theaters in Toronto here at Cineplex. Cineplex is like our version of AMC that you guys have in the US. And there's this one theater that's kind of tucked away in like an apartment building.
Yeah.
And they have what's known as a VIP theater. It's full recliners, very petite screen comparative to like our big ones that you and I would go see like IMAX on.
Yeah.
And I went to go see 1917 and I had the whole theater to myself on like a Monday afternoon. And man, like, again, to echo your sentiment, they're like emotionally charged while watching it to the point where like just being in that room alone. And again, this doesn't have to be big screen, but just like having no distractions and being dead center right in the middle of this petite little VIP thing. It's honestly like a theater going experience that like I will never forget. As a film fan, I will never forget. So same thing with Parasite. I saw Parasite at TIFF and it was like, oh my God, like this is going to be the one this year. This is 100% going to be the one this year. So moving along, buddy, what's your number two?
Yeah. So my number two is probably the only of all the films in our 25 year range. This is the only one that's before 2000
on
this list. And that is the movie that won that came out the year I was born. American Beauty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right, get into it.
Yeah. So like American Beauty, it was, I'm sorry. The first thing coming to my mind is like, is Hunter's gonna listen to this and he's probably gonna have a lot to say to me.
I'm trying to block the episode from his ears.
Yeah, but American Beauty. I watched. Let's see here. It was in 2020, I think. Summer 2020, I think. And it was you know, I really got, you know, thanks to, because of 1917. You know, I suddenly got into Sam Mendes. And you know, seeing American Beauty, it was another great film, another beautiful film. It's not, obviously it's not my favorite Mendes film of his. Obviously, like 1917 takes the cake.
Yeah.
But American Beauty, you know, it was just a really cool film that I actually genuinely liked. I know a lot of people don't like it now because of, you know, Kevin Spacey or, you know, some other things in the movie that, you know, that might not fly today. But American Beauty, it's a great film, and you know, it just coincidentally just happens to come out the year I was born. And I mean, it's just a fun movie. I just enjoy it.
I think it's, you said this actually very well, it's a movie that wouldn't get made today, or if it did, it would just come under complete public scrutiny.
Yes.
But it's in the year that it comes out is so transformational for like film.
Oh yeah.
In general, like 99 is that year where like the world stopped spinning on its axis, because we've got the American Beauties, we've got the Matrix, we've got the Fight Club, we got Election, we got there's 100 movies that I could name. You know, Insider, Sixth Sense, Green Mile, whatever. Again, actually, ironically enough, American Beauty is nominated against The Green Mile, The Insider, and The Sixth Sense, and beats them. I really appreciate American Beauty. Good pick, man. Really, really good pick. So, and folks, that takes us to our number ones. I don't know what you're gonna pick, man. You've got me on edge here. I really don't know, because like everything that you've picked is so different from one another. But I'm gonna go off the cuff here. So I thought I was gonna pick something different, and I gotta go with my gut here. And okay. And I actually spoke about this week on social media, and it's because of the sentimental value, but also I'll go with like the rewatchability of this film as a whole. And it's aged really well. It's surprisingly aged really well. The pacing of it's phenomenal. The supporting cast, Joaquin and Jaimon, is great. And I'm a Russell Crowe guy, man. Like, Crowe was my guy growing up, man. Between that and A Beautiful Mind. And, you know, a few hit and misses there, but Gladiator really withstands the test of time for me. And Gladiator is easily my number one. It is the film that made me care about films. And I can't say it enough that, like, this had such a big role in creating the person that I am today, as someone who gets excited for opening day, opening weekend, like opening show. And again, that's just more like a sentimental type of thing. But the memories that I have of this film and being so excited, and like, it's so not a kid's movie. And I was 11 years old when it came out, but like, it stuck with me. And I still get those butterflies when watching some of the sequences in it the same way I did. And it's cool to be able to, it's not really cool, but it's so wonderfully nostalgic to still feel that way, even as an adult man. And again, it's something that I hope to share, you know, with my daughter in the years to come, maybe in a couple of years. I mean, she's only 6 years old. Let's not throw her into the deep end. But nevertheless, Gladiator is my number one, man. I was talking about it this week on the Top 5 Film Dive social media. It was my favorite film of 2000. And it's actually in the conversation again below that, like La La Land, Goodfellas, Exorcist, Gladiators right there.
Gotcha.
Number one, what is yours, bud?
My number one, it's film you've already talked about. I think it's the second film that's like that we're overlapping on. It's also recent. It's Parasite. Parasite. I mean, you kind of already hit the nose for it, but Parasite, this is another film that really got me, where I saw it and it really got me into a director. You know, I saw this and decided to check out all of Bong Joon-ho's work, and I love that man. Now he's fantastic. You know, what he does at Parasite, you know, making it genre bending, you know, making like, you know, one scene be one thing, and the next thing you know, it turns into something else. Like, it's just absolutely incredible. And you know how I saw my buddy Ryan, and when we came out of it, like, you know that meme of it's SpongeBob and Patrick and their jaws are dropped and their eyes are just it's from the SpongeBob SquarePants movie.
Yeah,
that was literally me and Ryan after seeing Parasite. Like, we were just like it was just awesome, you know, just seeing, like, you know, the cast was perfect. The writing is, you know, it's a character in and of itself.
Yes.
You got all the iconic scenes from, you know, the peach sequence to the birthday party massacre. And then, you know, the scene where they go into the basement and the movie really takes a different shift in tone. And like, it's just all awesome. You know, again, like you said, if someone were to walk up to me and tell me that they didn't like Parasite, they say it's a terrible movie, I would be like, okay, I want to punch you in the face for that. And because Parasite is definitely a best picture. What a best picture winner should be. It made a statement. Well, it's a bold filmmaking film. And, you know, it is probably the most deserving film of all the best picture winners out there. It's definitely the one that deserves it the most.
Well said, bro. Well said, man. I totally echo that. So bravo. I'm going to go through my 5-1. And then, sir, you're going to give everybody listening your 5-1. My number 5 pick, Titanic, the one to kick off the show and kick off our 25-year countdown. Number 4, The Departed. Number 3, No Country for Old Men. My Oscars got it wrong pick is Crash. It should have went to Brokeback Mountain. Number 2 pick is Parasite of 2019. And number 1, Gladiator, directed by the legend, Mr. Ridley. Sir, pardon me, Ridley Scott. Your 5-1 time.
So my number 5 is The Departed. Number 4 being Slumdog Millionaire. Number 3 being The Hurt Locker. By what the Oscars got wrong was Moonlight instead of La La Land. My number 2 is American Beauty. Feel free to rain down hellfire down on me, Hunter. And then my number 1 is Parasite.
Bravo, sir. Bravo. Ty, thank you for coming on the show, brother. I'm really happy.
Thank you so much for having me on here.
I enjoy talking about anything and everything film related, buddy. Tell everybody who's listening where they can find you, links to the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, whatever you got.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at Tyler Banark Reviews Movies. Banark spelled B-A-N-A-R-K. Yep. You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Ty Banark Movies. And yeah, feel free to check out my websites that I write for at Cinema Solace and BuffFilmBuffs.com.
Buff Film Buffs. Yeah, guys, check that one out. And guys, I'm going to put links to all of Tyler's stuff in the episode description. Please check them out. Again, across the board, all websites will be linked. So Ty, thank you for your time, brother. And we will touch base once the 94th Academy Awards take place next week. All right.
Oh yeah, brother.
Yeah, man. To everybody listening, thank you once again. You guys are wonderful. And thank you for all the support for last month's 2 episodes. It was a great turnout for listenership. Guys, signing off until next time. Take care.